Still trying to really get moving in our study of this chapter. I appreciate your forbearance, your very long suffering. I know we can justify moving slowly by saying that you can't plow 4 feet deep, 40 miles an hour. We understand that, but at the same time, we don't want to camp around this mountain too long. The Lord said to Israel when they'd been there at the foot of Sinai, "You've stayed here long enough, it's time to move on." So I want us to see if we can really, we've had a couple of weeks at least of background and introductory material here in Revelation 17, but we're going to see if we can really get a head of steam up in this chapter. Now, we've got some notes here, and I might give Brother Floyd the day off today and let Will be the hander outer. There you go. Thanks, Will. Good. Let's begin in verse 1, and we'll read down to the 6th verse, and then we'll move down to verse 18 and read that verse. In Revelation 17, "And there came one of the seven angels, which had the seven vials, and talked with me, saying unto me, Come hither, I will show unto thee the judgment of the great whore that sitteth upon many waters, with whom the kings of the earth have committed fornication, and the inhabitants of the earth have been made drunk with the wine of her fornication. So he carried me away in the spirit into the wilderness, and I saw a woman sit upon a scarlet-colored beast, full of names of blasphemy, having seven heads and ten horns. And the woman was arrayed in purple and scarlet color, and decked with gold and precious stones, and pearls, having a golden cup in her hand, full of abominations and filthiness of her fornication. And upon her forehead was a name written, Mystery, Babylon the Great, the mother of harlots and abominations of the earth. And I saw the woman drunken with the blood of the saints and with the blood of the martyrs of Jesus. And when I saw her, I wondered with great admiration." And then come down to verse 18. "And the woman which thou sawest is that great city which reigneth over the kings of the earth." So, the Lord willing, we're going to try to cover what this chapter tells us about this woman, this religious system that has been a mystery all through the millennia, thousands of years. We're looking at a space of time probably over 4,000 years. We're looking at that this woman, this religious system that's been covert, subsurface, undercover, and yet controlling so much of what happens in the world. She's called Mystery, Babylon, Mother of Harlots. And so we're going to look at what this chapter says about her. And then the Lord willing, next week, and it's a more difficult one next week, because next week we want to talk about the beast. And we've already looked at some verses about the beast in chapter 13. Do you want to read some background material for what's in chapter 17 and 18? You'll want to read chapter 13. So if you've got those notes there, we've learned that the woman who rides the beast has two spheres of influence. I didn't know how to say this other than this. We have the waters that she sits upon, and then we have the beast. And these are not distinct. They overlap. There's no question that there is an overlap there. And we're told in this chapter what each of these words represent, what the waters represent, what the beast, this word represents. If you look in verse 15 in this chapter, "And he saith unto me, The waters which thou sawest, where the whore sitteth, are peoples and multitudes and nations and tongues." So in our notes here at the top, the waters on which she sits, she wields a great controlling influence over the peoples of the world. I really wonder if what we are seeing worldwide, which is called populism. Who can tell me a homespun definition for populism? When we talk about, when you hear that word or you read it in the paper, you hear it on telly or something like that, what is meant by that? Fiona had a word, but she wasn't brave enough to tell me. Okay, Population is true, and it's a similar word, but it's really an appeal to the masses, appeal to people. You know, when the scripture tells us in Daniel chapter 2 about the metallic man, do you remember there the vision, the dream that Nebuchadnezzar had? And the head was what metal? Gold. And the breast and arms were silver. And then the loins were brass. And the legs were iron. And the feet were iron and clay mingled together. And they really don't cling to each other. They don't have a grip on each other. And we'll be looking at this, I think next week we'll have a look at this in regard to how this fits all the world empires. We're really thinking about the Babylonian Empire. The Medo-Persian Empire is the breast and arms of silver. The Grecian Empire, Alexander the Great and his generals are the loins of brass, or the belly, the loins of brass. And then the legs are the Roman Empire, Eastern Roman Empire, Western Roman Empire, two legs. And then the feet, when we come down to the feet, we have the 10 toes. And the 10 toes correspond to the 10 horns here that we read about in this chapter. And they have to do with kings. But the feet being clay and iron represent there some of the strength of the Roman Empire there, but there's also the weakness of populism. When we talk about populism, we're talking about the man in the street. As fickle as anything. I mean, governments are fickle enough, aren't they? But the man in the street, changeable, swayed by opinion, not much strength. And that being joined with the iron because the beast, well, let's read the rest of what's here in the two spheres under the letter A. Does this mean that she has a populist following? Because in Revelation 17:2, the inhabitants of the earth have been made drunk with the wine of her fornication. The inhabitants of the earth. We're talking about people. We're talking about people all over the world influenced by this religious system called Mystery Babylon. Jeremiah spoke of this in Jeremiah 51:7. He says, Babylon hath been a golden cup in the Lord's hand that made all the earth drunken. The nations have drunken of her wine, therefore the nations are mad. So Mystery Babylon has an intoxicating, addictive influence over the earth dwellers. We found that phrase when we were earlier in the book of Revelation. We'll come back to it again. The earth dwellers, people whose only focus is this life and this world, and they have no thought of eternity. They're settled down on this world, and the woman has an influence, a controlling influence. She wields enormous influence without people ever realizing it. I'll read you something in just a moment about this. But then we need to go down to the next letter, the letter B there, that the woman also has influence over the nations and kings that comprise or that lead the kingdom of the Antichrist, that are in the upper echelon, so the kingdom of the Antichrist. And this is seen in verse 2, the latter part of the verse, where it says that the inhabitants of the earth have been made drunk with the wine of her fornication. And then in verse 7, it says here, and the angel said unto me, wherefore didst thou marvel? I'll tell thee the mystery of the woman and of the beast that carrieth her. The beast. The Antichrist and his kingdom actually transport, they actually support the woman, the evil religious system that's described as Mystery Babylon, that his kingdom supports her, the beast that carrieth her, which hath 7 heads and 10 horns. And then we see in verse 9, and here is the mind which hath wisdom. The 7 heads are 7 mountains on which the woman sitteth. In verse 10, we need to take note that 7 heads and 7 kings, verse 9, verse 10, are the same. And there are 7 kings, 5 are fallen, and 1 is, and the other is not yet come. And when he cometh, he must continue a short space. These are all the support structure, what bears the woman along, the false religious system. And then in verse 18, we saw where this religious system is centered in a city. The woman which thou sawest is that great city which reigneth over the kings of the earth. So this woman has two spheres of influence. This system not only infiltrates the populace of the world, but also the kingdom of the Antichrist. Often in the Old Testament, you would see a king and his kingdom spoken of as being identical. I suppose it's because the king had such rule and power and authority. When Daniel interpreted Nebuchadnezzar's dream, he said to him, "Thou art this," what? "Head of gold. You are the head of gold." And we say, wait. The head of gold is actually the Babylonian Empire. But the Lord said to Daniel, tell him he is the head of gold. So the king and his kingdom seem as identical. And yet it wasn't long until he was gone and another came. So I want you to read with me here the second point in our outline. The woman of Revelation 17 represents the mystery religion which was founded by Nimrod in Genesis 11. And maybe we should go back, come back with me to Genesis, because we really need, our verses are written here on our notes, but we really need to look at chapter 10, because Nimrod's name does not appear in chapter 11. And you've probably noticed this in your reading. We say that Nimrod was responsible for building the Tower of Babel, but his name doesn't appear in chapter 11. His name appears in chapter 10. So if you look with me from chapter 10 in Genesis to verse 8, and Cush, this is the son of Ham, son of Noah, Cush begat Nimrod, and he began to be a mighty one in the earth. He was a mighty hunter before the Lord. Wherefore it is said, even as Nimrod, the mighty hunter before the Lord. That's a proverb that was used in those days. Can I just suggest something to you here? And you can chuck it out and put it in a bin for the garbo to collect. But I really wonder, we're only about 350 years after the flood. Wasn't that what we figured out? The Tower of Babel was about that distance. Abraham is born around this time. He's younger, we think, than Nimrod. Not a lot. Shem, the son of Noah, is still alive. He lives a long time. He was born 100 years before the flood. He lives quite a lengthy period of time. Some people think it was Shem that killed Nimrod. The Battle of the Titans in Greek myths is thought often to picture the death of Nimrod by Shem, that Shem killed him. Now, we're not sure about that. Leave that aside. But I want to show you here that it says about Nimrod that he was a mighty hunter before the Lord. I really wonder if when the animals came off the ark, we believe there were dinosaurs on the ark. They could be juveniles. I don't think they were eggs that had to be hatched after the flood. But that probably juvenile dinosaurs. There have been some really interesting studies done over the last few years that show that when dinosaurs are newborn, when they're young, that they stay small for several years and then they go through a growth spurt. And if dinosaurs in the juvenile stage were taken on the ark and after they came off a year later, a little bit over a year later, took off into the growth spurt, I would not be at all surprised, but Nimrod became a killer of dinosaurs or the big animals that were on the ark. And his fame, his renown went from there to being a mighty hunter of souls, a mighty gatherer of men. Because when we read further here in this, it says in verse 10, and the beginning of his kingdom. Whose kingdom? Nimrod's. Was Babel. Oh, that's what we've got in chapter 11. You notice in verse 9, in chapter 11, therefore is the name of it called Babel. Because the Lord did there confound the language of all the earth, and from thence did the Lord scatter them abroad upon the face of all the earth. So verse 10 in chapter 10, come back here, and the beginning of his kingdom was Babel, and Erech and Akkad and Calna in the land of Shinar. Okay, that's where Babel was built. Out of that land went forth Asher, and there are many commentators that think that Asher is another name for Nimrod, and builded Nineveh and the city Rehoboth and Calah and Rezin between Nineveh and Calah, the same as a great city. And so Babel is the beginning of his kingdom. So come back with me to Revelation, because we see in Nimrod one of the most important characters in human history. And we've read through the verses sufficiently there. We might read Genesis 11, 1 to 8 here under number 2 on our outline, where it says in Genesis 11, 1 to 8, "And the whole earth was of one language and of one speech. And it came to pass as they journeyed from the east that they found a plain in the land of Shinar, and they dwelt there. And they said one to another, 'Go to, let us make brick and burn them thoroughly.' And they had brick for stone, and slime had they for mortar. And they said, 'Go to, let us build us a city and a tower whose top,'" and I've made bold the two words "may reach" because they're in italics. Did you notice that they're different from the other words before and after? In our Bible, they're in italics. What does that mean? All right. When we're reading our Bibles, King James Bible, and I really appreciate our translators because they didn't just insert words lightly. But if they were reading and translating a text and they weren't quite sure if they had conveyed the meaning of it, they would occasionally stick in a word in italics to try to clarify it. Sometimes the text reads better without those words. And if you read this text without those words, it says that they said, "Go to, let us build a city and a tower whose top unto heaven." And I don't think the idea was that they would build a tower high enough to keep them from floodwaters if the world ever flooded the world again. That wasn't the plan. The plan was that they wanted a tower whose top was dedicated to the worship of the heavens. Now, Pastor Buddy's sticking in some italic words, aren't I? So you will forgive me, won't you? Just like you forgive the translators. All right. But this is the beginning of astrology. Astronomy existed before. What's the difference between astronomy and astrology? Speak loudly and tell us. What's astronomy? Study of the heavens, study the stars. And the word aster is a word for star. So what's astrology? Star signs. Star signs? Okay. The worship of the heavens. The idea that if you were born on a certain date, you were born on a certain star sign, and that determines your character and your personality, and it can never be changed, is pagan. That's where the horoscopes come from. And so, if you're reading horoscopes and paying attention to them, stop. Just like that. Joy had a teacher in primary school. I think it was you, didn't you, that had the teacher, or was it Joanna, that wanted to teach astrology to the kids, about grade 5 or 6, somewhere along there. And whichever one of our kids it was came home and said, "Dad, our teacher's going to teach us about astrology tomorrow." I said, "Oh, no, he's not." And so I grabbed a book I had, and I photocopied a page or two and went straight to the school that afternoon, and I found him. And I said, politely, respectfully, I said, "Would you, our daughter says that you're going to talk to the class tomorrow about star signs and astrology and all this. And would you take time to read this before you teach the kids?" He said, "Sure." It was very reasonable. He got up in class the next day and he said, "We were going to do that, but we're not going to do that." And the reason was, Kurt Koch wrote a book that talks about astrology. And what's interesting is that the entire, what do we call it? The entire zodiac has shifted sufficiently that it's completely out of line. And if you say you were born in this house under this star, you're wrong. Because in the thousands of years that have passed since they initially set it up, the sidereal motion of the stars has made it completely inaccurate. So he got up and said, "It's wrong. I didn't realize it was wrong. So we're not going to teach it." You know, it really pays to appeal to people, doesn't it? It really does. It really pays to appeal. You know something is wrong according to what you read in Scripture. Go with a good attitude. But we shouldn't roll over. We shouldn't just let somebody push us over. So the stars, the planets, have no influence whatsoever in our personality and character. Sin has, Adam has, our parents have, but the stars don't. And we believe, from what we read in history, that Nimrod's purpose was to set up a one-world religion that worshiped the stars and not the maker of the stars, not the creator of the stars. And the reason that they would do that, I think the reason he did that was because he noticed as the season shifted, the fertility of the crops changed, or the fruitfulness of the crops changed. Well, obviously then, the stars control the fruitfulness of the crops, and if they control that, then they control us, and therefore we should worship them because they're so powerful and they control us. And so we should believe in the zodiac and astrology and horoscopes and all that sort of thing like that, and so we should do that. And that's where it started. And you know, that's how it came to be, that Nimrod not only started an occult pagan religion, but it involved fertility. And if you think where that goes with people, then you understand how every pagan religion in the world involves a fertility cult. And they're so immoral, so immoral. I'm not going to tell you things I know. You don't need to know them. So that was the plan, and he intended to do that. I want to read you something here. I don't usually bring books along to read out of, but I'm going to. This book is called Things to Come by Dwight Pentecost. It's a good book on prophecy. It is obtainable. Secondhand is the best way to get it. It probably costs you $70 or $80 new now, but you can find them secondhand. Dwight Pentecost wrote this. And in it, he has a quote from Harry Ironside. Do any of you have any Harry Ironside books? He was a dear old salvo who became a Bretho, pastored Moody Memorial Church in Chicago way back in the early 1900s, mid or earlier. And he says this. He says the mystery religion of Babylon is described as a woman who is a religious system. She dominates the civil power, at least for a time. The name upon her forehead should easily enable us to identify her. But in order to do that, we'll do well to go back to the Old Testament and see what is revealed concerning literal Babylon. For the one will surely throw light upon the other. We learn that the founder of Babel, or Babylon, was Nimrod, of whose unholy achievements we read in the 10th chapter of Genesis. He was the arch apostate of the patriarchal age. He persuaded his associates and followers to join together in building a city and a tower which should reach unto heaven, to be recognized as a temple or rallying center for those who did not walk in obedience to the word of the Lord. They called their city and tower Babel, which could be interpreted the gate of God. But it was soon changed by divine judgment into Babel, which means confusion. It bore the stamp of unreality from the first, for we're told they had brick for stone, brick instead of stone, and slime had they for mortar. An initiation to that which is real and true has ever since, an imitation of that which is real and true has ever since characterized Babylon in all ages. Nimrod was a grandson of Ham, the unworthy son of Noah. Noah had brought through the flood the revelation of the true God. Ham, on the other hand, seems to have been all too readily affected by the apostasy that brought the flood. His name means swarthy or darkened, or more literally, the sunburnt. And the name indicates the state of the man's soul. Darkened by light from heaven, Ham became a son. Ham begat a son named Cush, the black one, and he became the father of Nimrod, the apostate leader of his generation. Ancient lore adds this. It says that the wife of Nimrod was the infamous Semiramis. She is reputed to have been the foundress of the Babylonian mysteries and the first high priestess of idolatry. Incidentally, one writer said that she claimed to have rabbits that laid eggs. That sounds like Easter, doesn't it? Okay. Thus, Babylon became the fountainhead of idolatry and the mother of every heathen and pagan system in the world. The mystery religion that was there originated, spread in various forms throughout the whole earth, and is with us today, and shall have its fullest development when the Holy Spirit has departed and the Babylon of the Apocalypse holds sway. Building on the primeval promise of the woman's seed who was to come, Genesis 3:15, Semiramis bore a son whom she declared was miraculously conceived. And when she presented him to the people, he was hailed as the promised deliverer. This was Tammuz, whose worship Ezekiel protested against in the days of the captivity. Thus was introduced the mystery of the mother and the child, a form of idolatry that is older than any other idolatry known to man. The rites, the R-I-T-E-S, of this worship were secret. Only the initiated were permitted to know its mysteries. It was Satan's effort to delude mankind with an imitation so like the truth of God that they would not know the true seed of the woman when he came in the fullness of time. That's the Lord Jesus. From Babylon, the mystery religion spread to all the surrounding nations. Everywhere the symbols were the same. Everywhere the cult of the mother and the child became the popular system. Their worship was celebrated with the most disgusting and immoral practices. The image of the Queen of Heaven with the babe in her arms was seen everywhere. Though the names might differ as languages differed, it became the mystery religion of Phoenicia, and by the Phoenicians was carried to the ends of the earth. Astaroth and Tammuz, the mother and child of these hardy adventurers, became Isis and Horus in Egypt, Aphrodite and Eros in Greece, Venus and Cupid in Italy, and bore many other names in more distant places. Within 1,000 years, Babylonianism had become the religion of the world, which had rejected the divine revelation. And linked with the central mystery of Babylon were countless lesser mysteries, such as the doctrine of purgatory, being purified after death, salvation by endless sacraments, sprinkling with holy water, the offering of round cakes to the Queen of Heaven, as Jeremiah mentions, dedication of virgins to the gods, which was literally sanctified prostitution, weeping for Tammuz for a period of 40 days. That sounds like Lent, doesn't it? Prior to the great festival of Ishtar, who is said to have received her son back from the dead, for it was taught that Tammuz was slain by a wild boar and afterwards brought back to life. To him, the egg was sacred as depicting the mystery of the resurrection, even as the evergreen tree was his chosen symbol, set up in honor of his birth at the winter solstice, when a boar's head was eaten in memory of this conflict and a Yule log burned with many mysterious observances. The sign of the cross was sacred to Tammuz, symbolizing the life-giving principle as the first letter of his name, Tammuz. Is represented upon numbers of the most ancient altars and temples, and did not, as many have supposed, originate with Christianity. From this mystery religion, the patriarch Abraham was separated by divine call, and with this same evil cult, the nation that sprang from him was in constant conflict until under Jezebel, a Phoenician princess, it was grafted onto what was left of the religion of Israel in the 10 northern tribes. In the day of Ahab, Judah was polluted by it, for Baal worship was but the Canaanitish form of the Babylonian mysteries. I'll skip down a bit here. If there's anything else that needs to be... Here's an interesting... the ancient cult crossed the sea and was propagated in Italy under the name of the Etruscan mysteries, and eventually Rome became the headquarters of Babylonianism. The chief priests wore mitres shaped like the head of a fish. You ever seen that? In honor of Dagon, the fish god, another form of the Tammuz mystery, the chief priest, when established in Rome, took the title Pontifex Maximus, and this was imprinted on his mitre. Julius Caesar, like all young Romans of good family, was an initiate in this cult. He became the head of the state. He was elected Pontifex Maximum. And this title was held henceforth by all the Roman emperors down to Constantine the Great, who was at one and the same time head of the church and high priest of the heathen. The title was afterwards conferred upon the bishops of Rome and is borne by the Pope today, who is thus declared to be not the successor of Peter, but the direct successor of the high priest of the Babylonian mysteries. Lots of interesting things to read there. And you probably read some of those yourself. Wow. All right. Now, you put up with that. I had a teacher in Bible college that used to read to the class out of that book and put us all to sleep. Okay. All right. Number 3 point on our notes. Let's go a little further and see how far we can get. He did. If he could have read enthusiastically, it would have helped us. These two chapters, point number 3, Revelation 17 and 18, expose mystery Babylon to public view. I wrote it up here like this. I wrote the Nimrod agenda. Tell me, what are the three things that Nimrod wanted to do that the Antichrist will want to do? One, religion. All right? A worldwide religion. What's another one? Government. And another one? Economy. If you don't have the mark, you can't buy or sell, according to chapter 13. The Nimrod agenda. And he keeps trying to implement this. And every once in a while, it looked like he's got it all together, and then the wheels fall off. Crashes and burns. But there's coming a day in the tribulation, around halfway through, when the Antichrist is able to put this all together with the false prophet and, of course, the woman riding the beast, the Nimrod agenda. Now, Les and Joy thought I said cop. This is supposed to be a U. My biro is dyslexic. But that's supposed to be the woman in the cup. Well, let's read through point number three just quickly. This one world religion, government, and economy, the Nimrod agenda, this was the plan in Genesis 11, and the plan is the plan at present. I wonder how much. I'm not a conspiracy theorist, okay? So you can lay that to rest, but I wonder how much this whole COVID-19 thing really has to do with control of people. I just wonder. I don't have the answers. I've got better things to do than chase answers on that. That's right. And so progressively, it can be an even step back a little bit. How many of you remember when the European Union Economic Community, do you remember when everyone said when there are 10 nations joined up, we'll be gone because the tribulation will be here in the book of Revelation? You remember that? How many members, do you have any idea how many there are now? There was 30-something, wasn't there? And obviously, the economic community is not the 10-nation kingdom of the Antichrist. We understand that. And it teaches us a lesson. Be careful about anybody saying, this is that. This event in history is that in the Bible. Be careful. It's been proven to be false so many times. I remember back in the early 80s when we first came to the north that we were told that the alignment of the planets had to do with the tribulation. And I had that really wonderful sanctified response like that. You're allowed to do that. False prophets deserve it. But I was amazed how many people were trying to use that to scare people into the kingdom. So these objectives have been covert, the middle of that paragraph, for the most part. Though the discerning believers of every age have caught glimpses of them from time to time, not only the empires of wicked men, but the crazed religions in their thousands, and all the economic systems have pointed back to Nimrod and forward to the beast and its rider. Now, I think we should stop there, because if we get into the next point, we'll go too far. So let's stop there and come back to that next week. But what insights, what thoughts do you have? What have you learned that I don't know that you need to share with us today? Anybody got a thought, Wayne? Cashless society. We have a friend that we haven't seen in years, Darlene Richard, that came from the States and went to work for a one of the big banks down in Sydney, and she's traveled in all sorts. She visited us one time up here in the north, and she said, I just came back from New Zealand, and she said, you would not believe, a representative of a big world bank somewhere in the world was there speaking to bankers from Australia, in fact, all over the Pacific. And this guy said, we are just almost to the point of having a mark in the right hand. And if any of you are Christians, don't say this is the mark of the beast. And he was warning them off saying that. But we are so close to being able to do all our banking with just like that. And now the, what do they call them, the little chips or whatever they did, a grain of rice or smaller, and all this sort of thing like that. We think that all of that works that direction. So, and I'm going to say goodbye, Brother Floyd. Oh my, is this?
There are an increasing number of businesses that are doing that.
Exactly.
There's a little chip in the back of your hand, hold it up, and the door.
And it used to be we could get in the door just by going like this. Business. Yep. With the number plate, we had a video some years ago called the Internet of Things. Do any of you remember that? The Internet of Things that we showed on a Sunday night, and it talked about how you could control almost everything in your house just with a push button, whatever like that. Not only your garage door, but heating and cooling and fridge and stove and all the rest of it, everything. Enormous. We knew when they did that, when you're talking about it, it seemed like it would make such good business. We knew it would be hacked. And somebody had virtually everything they had stolen because a hacker got in through the temperature control on the aquarium that the fish were in. And it was hacked, and they got in that way, and they got in the computer, and they opened the house up and took whatever they wanted. I've got a wife that tells me Will walked in the door. I like her a lot better than my phone. Okay, our time's almost gone. Anybody else have a thought for us? I know. You know, people, young people say, why does he keep looking at that thing on his wrist? And how come it's got hands on it? What's wrong with him? It's not because I'm kin to him. But I did find out that Ferrari is Italian for Smith, so I feel a lot better now. Norm, could you pray for us this morning as we stop? Thank you for participating, dear people.